Good morning, everyone. We are pretty sure this morning that out in space, this music is not being broadcast. Over the weekend, the North Koreans launched a missile that it claimed sent a satellite into space to broadcast music like this. Western observers, including the Pentagon, say no, in fact, the three stages of the missile landed harmlessly in the Pacific Ocean. But the point is, North Korea has demonstrated the ability to launch a missile that could travel as far as 1,900 miles or more. Joining us to discuss the significance of this and the significance of the very, very strong reaction to the North Korean news from the U.S. President Barack Obama, who is now in Turkey at this hour, in fact, is Brian Myers, a researcher of North Korean ideology and propaganda at Dongseo University in Busan, and John Sudworth of the BBC, both joining us from Seoul, South Korea. John and Brian, thanks for joining us.
Sure thing.
It's a pleasure.
So, John, let's begin. What is the military capability as far as we're able to determine at this point, and who does it threaten? And certainly the reaction has been very, very strong. We'll talk about that in a moment. John?
Well, I guess it depends who you believe. If you believe North Korea, which, as you say, predictably has already announced the success of its satellite launch, it says that the object is now in orbit broadcasting revolutionary melodies, then I guess you'd have to say it's a pretty significant achievement. But the U.S. military, which was closely monitoring this launch, has deemed it to be a failure. It says it splashed down somewhere in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And it seems, on that evidence, to have traveled about 3,000 kilometers. So, in one sense, it's a failure, but at least North Korea, I guess, in a military sense, has demonstrated that it has rocket technology capable of sending an object weighing possibly around 100 kilograms, at least that far. And I think some observers will say that that does enhance its military threat above what we knew it to have already.
Although 100 kilograms is far below the payload you'd need for any sort of nuclear warhead. We'll talk about that in a moment. Brian Myers, is it the case, and we've been through this on a number of times in the past, that the strong Western reaction to what happened today is itself a success in terms of the propaganda victory for the North Koreans?
I think so. I think it is a success because, remember, the failure to launch a satellite into orbit is not such a big problem for the Kim Jong-il regime. The North Korean people is well aware of the handicap that its scientists are operating under by trying to develop a nuclear program in the face of world opposition. And, you know, the claim to be on the cutting edge of technology has never been a part of the regime's domestic propaganda. So I think despite the failure of the satellite launch, the Kim Jong-il regime can still make plenty of hay out of the fact that it stood up to the world, it defied the United States, and that the United States is raging as it always does and actually not doing anything significant. So I would agree with John Sudworth's assessment that this is a big success in propaganda terms for the Kim Jong-il regime.
So it would appear by both of your analyses that this statement from U.S. Ambassador to the U.N., Susan Rice, over the weekend simply plays into that narrative. Listen.
The first resolution that is really the operative one was from 2006 when the North Koreans launched a missile and the United Nations Security Council demanded a halt to future missile-related activity and any future missile launches. We feel very strongly that what occurred today was a violation of that resolution. So we will go back and work to both toughen existing regimes but to add to that resolution.
So that was Susan Rice speaking on ABC over the weekend. John Sudworth, does the UN Security Council, first of all, have the ability to compel North Korea to do anything here? And does the procedural battles in the Security Council simply enhance this notion that North Korea is defying the world that's trying to hold it back?
Well, I think if there was the possibility of a unified response, then I think North Korea would feel stung by that. But I suppose diplomatically, you have to say it's calculated correctly here. I think the kind of statement you heard from Susan Rice there was exactly the sort of thing that Washington was saying in the run-up to this launch. North Korea will have expected to have been condemned for doing this, but I think it will have also calculated that the possibility of China and Russia coming on board with any sort of agreement for punishment that would mean anything was extremely unlikely. China, of course, is a long-standing ally of North Korea. It may have calculated that this launch is now a done deal. It's failed, at least in the sense of trying to put a satellite into orbit. And the value of provoking this prickly and potentially nuclear-armed state on its border any further just isn't in Chinese interest.
Brian Myers, how do the North Koreans portray the fact that the Russians and certainly the Chinese are likely to assist it in the Security Council? Do they specifically note that the Chinese are bailing the North Koreans out, or is it a much more general view?
It's a much more general view. The North Koreans basically do not acknowledge China's role in foreign policy at all, or Russia's for that matter. They like to portray the conflict as a conflict between North Korea on the one hand and America and certain impure elements inside the UN on the other. So North Korea shies away from condemning the UN as a whole, but at the same time it makes clear that it does not respect the UN. It does not consider the UN's resolutions to be binding in any way.
Now, we've seen again and again around the world that the development of nuclear technology and missile technology produces an enormous propaganda, positive story in the sense that here is a nation joining the powerful, larger nations in the world. But is there any strategic significance to this capability, Brian Myers, at all?
I don't think there is much of a strategic sense to it because, the main goal of the North Korean regime is to get the Americans out of South Korea. And it's already, even before all these nuclear tests, it was in the position with its conventional weapons to destroy Seoul, as it has kept reminding South Korea for the past 10 or 15 years. So I don't really think that it changes the strategic ball game quite so much. But it does, I think, sort of usher North Korea into the nuclear club. We have to remember that even though it did violate UN Security Council Resolution 1718, North Korea did handle the actual launch with a measure of respect for international norms and procedures that we don't usually associate with a country. It announced the launch well in advance. It announced public hazard zones. And most importantly, it gave everyone a time frame, and it fired the missile within that time frame. And I think all of this has made it more difficult for North Korea's critics to claim that it was some reckless attempt to destabilize the region. I think we're seeing North Korea trying to behave now like a dignified nuclear power.
Well, those are interesting details, and I'm grateful, Brian Myers, that you pointed them out to us because it does set this into context. John Sudworth, I'll put it to you. What can North Korea do this week that it couldn't do last week based on this demonstration?
Well, I'd agree with Brian. Probably very little in the immediate analysis. I think longer term, there will be those who worry that this is yet another, albeit small, step towards the day where North Korea may well be able to deliver a warhead over a long distance and possibly a nuclear-armed one. We don't yet know with any certainty exactly what the level of development of North Korea's nuclear weapons capability may be. But I think in general terms, what's interesting here is that this is a deeply impoverished state, a highly reclusive country that struggles to feed its own people, and yet here it is attempting to join the club of spacefaring nations with a launch that by some estimates would have cost them $300 million. There's no doubt about it. They saw this as a very important step and well worth spending the money on. And as you've heard from Brian, probably one of the main motivations is the message that it gives to its own people, a sort of gun salute, if you like, to the technological prowess of the leadership.
Brian Myers, last word in the last few seconds that we have. South Korean reaction, is that an indicator in any way of how critical the South Koreans view this?
Well, the South Koreans do not view it very critically, I think. We always have this pattern in South Korea. The initial South Korean response to North Korean provocations is usually very disapproving. But when the rest of the world piles onto North Korea, nationalism starts to make itself felt, and the South Koreans start to express sympathy for North Korea. There's already a lot of people in the South Korean press saying that Japan was making a big fuss about nothing. So I think that, you know, the South Korean disapproval of the North Korean missile launch will be very quick to fade.
Right, and a pattern that is being repeated, at least in the early going. Brian Myers, researcher of North Korean ideology and propaganda at Dongseo University in Busan, and John Sudworth of the BBC, both joining us from Seoul, South Korea. And Mark Garrison has some quick headlines.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.